News. I'm Cynthia Abrams in Nashville.
Nashville International Airport's name may be heading for a change. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee and the CEO of the Metropolitan Nashville Airport Authority have announced they would support renaming the airport for Dolly Parton. The authority considers the question next month. I'm Louise Schiavone, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include FJC, a foundation of donor-advised funds, working to maximize the impact of charitable giving and to create customized philanthropic solutions. Learn more at fjc.org.
Oh, that sweet, sweet music. It's time once again for The Conversation on WVIK, which is a weekly celebration of local radio, the way it's meant to be brewed. This week, my guest is Ashley Johnston from the Quad Cities Airport. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you'll stick around for this week's Conversation. Well, Ashley, thank you for coming and being part of the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I better turn up your microphone. That always helps. But, you know, it really, I've been looking forward to this because we were colleagues for a while, and I follow you through social media, and I see your work a lot, but I haven't had a chance to have a good sit down with you in a while. So thank you for taking the time to come in and hang out on WVIK.
I appreciate it. It's good to be back on the campus.
Well, we're going to get to all of these connections in a bit. And by the way, you're always welcome on the campus. You just come back any old time you want. But, and I'll get to how we met in a little bit, but you know I'm nosy. You've known that about me for a long time. So we're going to start with where you came here from. Where'd you grow up? All that kind of stuff.
So I am originally from the Naperville area, just outside of Chicago, and I came to the Quad Cities almost 9 years ago now, which is hard to believe it's been that long. It's flown by, as they say, not to drop in too many airport puns.
Well, we should have a counter going. Let's see how many work in during the... No, I'm sorry.
So I even stayed in school there. I went to North Central mm-hmm. College, so I was always a D3 advocate. I'm a huge supporter of D3 and the opportunities that they give students in liberal arts education.
We should unpack that.
Yes.
Because we have plenty of time to do all the unpacking.
Yep.
D3, Division III,
yep.
is a part of the NCAA where scholarships are not permitted, and schools are very closely scrutinized to make sure that athletes don't get special attention with financial aid or anything like that. But yes, North Central and Augustana are in the same Division III conference. So I just wanted to get, you know, through some of that college speak for our listeners. So.
That's right. And we're ready for kickoff September 5th, first game, number one versus number two in Naperville. So
who are you playing?
We are playing Bethel.
Wow, you're starting right off there, huh?
I'm not a fan of that draw, and I can't imagine they are either, but we'll see. It will test our skills right out of the gate, no waiting.
Well, but that's one of the funny things, and you know by now, Ashley, when you're hanging out with me, everything is an aside. But I had a really good friend who was, who still is, chief of staff at Kent State University, a well-known sort of mid-sized public university in Ohio. And she once confided in me in like the huge percentage of their entire athletic budget for the year that came from getting slaughtered by major university football programs in the first 2-3 games of the season. You know, they'd go off to like Auburn and get thwacked, or Texas A&M and get demolished. But that doesn't happen in Division III.
Yeah, and you know, it gives it a little bit more heart. I really, really enjoy watching D3 football, mm-hmm. especially when you start to get into those playoff weeks, because what you see is that these kids are just as talented. They're just a little bit smaller. They're not, you know, they just didn't grow up quite as big. And so, you know, they would get slaughtered playing at a higher level, but mm-hmm. it's still really, really good football. Yeah. And across all sports in D3, They're really talented athletes.
Yeah. Well, let's talk just a little bit about Naperville and the whole area around there. So my memories go back to in the early 70s, my oldest brother was on a Rock Island Little League team that went really far, and they played in a state tournament at Naperville. And in those days, the Ball Diamond, if you look to the west, it was a cornfield, and to the right, it was downtown. I mean, it was like that close, right? That city has exploded, and a lot of it during the course of your life there. What was it like to grow up in Naperville? What are the cool things to do? Because a lot of us just drive by on 88. Tell us about what we should do in Naperville.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Naperville was still really, really small. Even when we moved there, our subdivision was new. We were one of the first houses on the block. Huh. And so coming from an established neighborhood where we came from, which was West Michigan, it was a little bit unnerving to look around. And my dad thought it was cool because there was like a forest. It felt like a forest preserve.
Mm-hmm.
And the developers warned him, this is all going to be gone in a year or two. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And now we are smack dab in the middle of several subdivisions in that area. So yeah. It was a really cool place to grow up, especially the proximity to the city. Obviously, you know, having access to the Field Museum and the Museums of Science and Industry. But even, you know, our high school had its own planetarium. So we didn't have to go downtown. We could just walk down the hall. So that was a unique experience. And then just seeing how Naperville has changed over the years, and you forget a little bit what it was like when we first moved there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I loved about North Central is that it's right in the middle of historic downtown. So you're mm-hmm. surrounded by mm-hmm. old Victorian houses that have been updated and renovated. And it still gives you this very classic campus feel with lots of old trees and, you know, the landscaping. And so it's just a cool place. It's a good size community where you have access to all of the things, but it's not quite the what I would refer to as the chaos of downtown. So yeah, it was really good. It was, and I went to a huge high school. My high school had over 3,000 kids.
Oh, wow.
In it. So my college was smaller than my high school.
You know what? The same for me. When I graduated from Rock Island High School, I think the enrollment was about 2,500, 2,600, maybe even higher than that. And then I came to Augustana, which was about 2,000 at the time. And now that's kind of reversed, and Augie's a little bit bigger and Rocky's a little bit smaller, and that's how it goes. I got to share one other memory of Naperville. My senior year at Augie, I got to be the Viking mascot for the football team. It's nothing cool like they have now with like a big foam head and it's Gus, the very cool stuff. We had to make our own costumes. But here's the thing. As I think you know, I am just terribly nearsighted. And when I take my glasses off, everything's just blurry, you know. And I wanted to, because I was an Augie football fan, I wanted to see a game. And when I was on the sidelines being the Viking and leading cheers and that kind of stuff, I couldn't see anything, right? So we were playing on the road at North Central that year. And I talked a couple of buddies into it. We got up and flew down US Route 30 and came into Naperville just so I could actually watch the team play. And so that's one of the many reasons Naperville has a special place in my heart. But yeah.
Yeah.
So, and you still follow North Central football very closely. Do you make it to how many games do you make it to in a season?
You know, it depends. There have been seasons where I've made it to every single home game, one away game if it's at Augustana, and if we're hosting playoff rounds, then every playoff round. So there's been many a season where we get to the Stag Bowl, which is the Division III championship game, and my dad and I consider going and trying to get tickets because it's always somewhere out of state, Texas, Ohio, wherever. And then we think, you know, this might be the last straw for my mom. This might be where she says, you've had enough football for this year. Because, I mean, it's a 9 to 11 game commitment some seasons.
Oh, yeah.
So, I try not to miss home games if I can avoid it. So
yeah.
we're quarterback club members. We have our pass. We have our end zone cookouts. And, you know, it's a lot of fun because we, you know, when at the D3 level, they treat it like big time football. You get the tailgates going and the music and build a community.
All of that's recent. I mean, so that senior year, Augie made it to the Stag Bowl, and it was in Phoenix City, Alabama.
Mm.
And so did they have any provision for the mascot to come? No. So I got a bunch of buddies together, and we rented an RV. I don't think they legally rent to people who are like 22 anymore or 21, right? Now it's got to be much older. So we take an RV. We leave. Oh, my goodness. We left, I don't know, super early in the morning. We hit the road and we drove all night. And then we landed in this parking lot. Maybe it was late. I don't remember. But I do remember it was pre-dawn. We get to the parking lot of the football stadium, which is, I mean, Rock Island High School Stadium is far better than what that one was. I mean, that's how far D3 has come. Now, it's always in a beautiful place, great facility, all this kind of stuff. And by the time we pull in, my name is on the lease. So I had to be very, very mature on the drive down. When I stopped, put it in park, turned it off, every horizontal space in that camper was taken by snoozing friends of mine, right? So all I could do was sit in the front seat and lean against the window, which led me to about 6:30 a.m. I feel my head banging, and it's a flashlight. A state trooper is banging, and I thought, oh my, we're in trouble now. But he was the nicest guy. He was an Alabama state trooper, and he said, y'all boys want a shower? And he took us into the stadium. And that's how far D3 has come, wow. Ashley Johnston. I think you get a much better treatment now when you go on a road trip for those games.
Yeah, they've done a really nice job. And it's fun, you know, when you get to the last round, you know, to see your D3 school on ESPNU.
Oh, yeah.
And you get the broadcast. And
yeah.
You get the TV timeouts, which are horribly frustrating in person, but you also get that sense of, like, we're doing something here. It's a lot of fun.
Well, that game was broadcast by ABC, mm-hmm. and so it's on Vimeo or something like that.
Oh, sure.
So I've gone back and watched it. The next year, let's see, is this after I graduated, there was this brand new network called ESPN, and Dave Rath, the sports information director for Augie, said, hey, Kai, if you're going, they're really short-staffed. If you could stand in the booth and be a spotter. So nowadays, you know, computers everywhere. I stood between the play-by-play guy and the color commentator was Bill Curry, legendary SEC coach. And my job was to simply point at these huge poster boards. Who made the tackle? Well, it was number 39. Point to number 39 and says, well, that's John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt. Do you know his father fought in the Korean War? And it was all these little things written on the notes. And of course, today it's all fed in their ears. I don't know why you got me reeling in the ears like this, Ashley. So let's get to more important and fun things. What did you study at North Central?
I studied organizational communication and I minored in journalism.
All right.
So yeah, I originally started in broadcast. I thought I wanted to be a morning zoo DJ. That seemed like a fun career. And it really started through college radio, to be honest. I was driving to community college, College of DuPage, mm-hmm. and I heard someone I knew on high school, because I listened to our college radio station because it played a lot of the music that I liked. And I thought, well, I know who that is. How did he get on the radio? So I used Facebook and I messaged him and I said, hey, I heard you on the radio today. How did you do that? And he said, it's just a class at North Central College. Anyone can take it. It doesn't even have to be your major. Just sign up. And I thought, I hadn't picked a four-year college yet. And I thought, that's it. That's close to home. I knew I didn't really want to go away to college. It was 15 minutes from home. So it's the only four-year college I ever applied to, got accepted, started in broadcast, and did that a couple of terms. I did news, traffic, and weather. And I really enjoyed it, but I didn't love the producing side of it so much because they wanted you to learn all facets of it. And I'm like, well, I really just like being on air, if we're being honest. And I also had advisors and professors that were good at setting expectations in terms of, this is what the early part of your radio career will look like. You just have to be prepared for that. And I thought, yeah, that doesn't really sound like a lot of fun. But I liked aspects of the other classes I was taking. So met with a couple advisors and pivoted to organizational communication. At the time, they didn't have a public relations track. They do now.
Yeah.
So that was just a way to get mass communication and public speaking and a lot of the different things, while also, you know, studying things like industrial psychology and some interesting electives.
Yeah.
And figure out, you know, what to do from there. And
yeah.
So I, you know, when I graduated, I had a panic moment that I think a lot of college students should embrace having, which is, what am I supposed to do now? Because it's not like you go into organizational communication as a job. That job title doesn't really exist. It can cover a lot of different things. So I went back to my advisor and I said, I don't really know what I'm supposed to be doing right now. And she said, have you ever thought about public relations? And I said, I have no idea what that means, but if you think I would be good at it, I will try that. Because she was a great advisor and mm-hmm. she'd known me as a student, obviously. And so that's really, I just started applying for internships. And that's how I landed in PR, really, was just a great advisor that took the time to know her student and make a suggestion that she thought would align with my skill set and my interests.
And it worked out pretty doggone well.
That's what I've been doing ever since.
Find out here in just a minute. How did the career start? What were the first gigs out of college?
So my first PR job was at an agency in downtown Chicago. It was a startup agency at the time. The owner had represented or does represent the Ricketts family while they were purchasing the Cubs and Wrigley Field at an agency and then started his own firm. And so got to call the Cubs front office quite a bit, and their hold music is Go Cubs Go. I can assure you of that just on a loop because I would have to put them on hold and wait for my boss to pick up. But they really specialized in government affairs and crisis communication. So I did that for a couple of years. But one, I didn't love the commute. Going downtown was an hour and a half commitment one way. So 3 hours of my day was spent just getting to and from work. And that was not for me. But I also wanted to be able to be at an organization where I could be the subject matter expert. I wanted to dig in more. And I hated feeling like an outsider for my clients. So I pivoted to in-house. And my next job was with Aldi. Their corporate headquarters is outside of Chicago.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, a nice, convenient 20-minute drive from home, so a substantially improved commute. But I worked in groceries for 2.5 years, and I loved it. Aldi was such a great organization to work for, but a lot of fun, too. All of our kitchens were always stocked with Aldi food, and every kitchen was a test kitchen because they wanted to make sure what they were being sent, you cook it the way it says, and that's how it's going to turn out, and how does this taste compared to name brands? And so I sat on the dressing and salsa floor for a while, which is not the most interesting floor to be on, but there was a brief moment in time. I got promoted during that time to public relations manager. And while they were opening up an office for me, I got moved to the bakery floor. So I sat on the cakes and cookies floor, which was maybe the best 4 months ever and dangerous because it was just constant slices like brioche and bun cakes just always in the break room up for grabs. Because once they tried a slice of it, they didn't need it anymore. So it was meant for all of us to eat.
Yeah.
It was great. I became such a believer. But they had a huge chef staff that would prepare meals every day for the directors and vice presidents and presidents using Aldi food and create gourmet meals every day. And but they would also bring us down from the marketing and advertising team for test recipes that they wanted to shoot for different ads and things like that. So we got to be put on the test kitchen rotation and go try fancy meals made with Aldi ingredients. So it was just a really, but you know, part of the reason I got that job was because they were looking at creating in-house issues and crisis management. They'd been relying on an agency. They were rapidly expanding at the time. And so they wanted to bring that expertise in-house. And it really was because I had issues management on my resume for my agency that landed me that first gig. So I also kind of found an early niche and have really held on to it.
Are you still an Aldi person?
I do love Aldi.
So I have to think that the overlap between public radio listenership and Aldi special buys aisle is very high. Because whenever I go, we always go to the special buys aisle, and I almost always see somebody I know to be a WVIK listener when I'm at my Aldi. Who got to test those things? That would have been the division I would want.
Special buys. Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember where that floor. Where would you put all that stuff is what I'm wondering. And like thinking about the some of the scale of that, because there's tents and chairs and...
When I cleaned out my mother's house after she passed away, most of it went into Lorian Swanson's attic and basement. That's what I found. Oh, that's great, Ashley. And I had forgotten that about that chapter. Did you come from there to the Quad Cities?
I did, yep. Okay. So I went from Aldi and relocated to the Quad Cities and landed at Augustana.
Yeah.
And was the director of public relations and social media for about 2.5 years before going to the airport.
Yeah, so. And I got to tell you, I love it when young colleagues get to go do really cool things, but I'm usually resentful. But I wasn't in this case because I'm also a big fan of the Quad Cities Airport. And I'm glad to have watched you help them and the executive leadership and all that kind of stuff. It's been fun to watch because my memories of that facility go back to my early, early childhood. So tell us a little bit about the scope of what you do for the Quad Cities Airport.
So I do a little bit of everything that's under a giant marketing umbrella. And so what that means is I do all of the public relations, of course, but a lot of the marketing as well. So social media content, we do a monthly e-news blast. If you are interested in getting longer form content from the airport, please sign up. It's only once a month. I try not to assault anyone's inboxes because I know we get enough junk email as it is. But you will see some longer form information there, travel tips, updates about the airport, things like that. So I also work with Mindfire out of Eclair, mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. where we do all of your more traditional advertising that you might see on billboards or see on TV, the fancy looking stuff online. I am not a graphic designer. I will never claim that skill. So they do a fantastic job really creating a personality for the airport. But one of the other interesting parts of my job, besides what you traditionally think of as marketing, is I get to speak directly with airline network planners and advocate mm-hmm. on behalf of our community in order to try and get more air service, which really just means more flights.
Right. And I bet you get a lot of input from the public on that.
I do. I get it. I know we all want a nonstop to wherever we need to go. It would be incredibly convenient if that existed. But, you know, one thing that you learn as you do that job is just how incredibly complex the airline network really is. And you're really at the mercy of their own business plans. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that have the airplanes. They're the ones that have the crew. We are really just the infrastructure that makes it possible for them to fly in and out.
But I'm not going to let you off the hook on that, because you and the whole team there have done a really good job at making the place so attractive that I think we've held on to some, we've added some over the years. Yeah, I mean, I won't tell you what my favorite is, but anyway, that I'd love to get back. But it's very convenient, right? And for those of us who have to travel for our work, it's fantastic, and or for fun. But I was just kind of curious about how that all comes together. And could you give us just a little bit of an insight into what the process is behind either adding or retaining a route? Because it's much more complicated than I think people understand.
It is, yeah. And I think the hardest thing for people to accept, and it's hard for me to accept some days, is that there's really very little that we as the airport can do. We really are the conduits between a community and the airline so that they can understand what maybe makes us unique or what are things that are on the horizon in terms of growth in a community, changes in businesses coming in and out or expansion, changes in visitation. So are we getting more people coming into the Quad Cities for leisure, for conferences? What does that look like? Because, you know, the airlines are looking at their own data about a community mm-hmm. that only tells a portion of the story. So our job is to try and fill that story out and make us stand out somehow. How do they go down their list of all the airports they want to serve or are serving and posit the Quad Cities and say, I think there's something here that's worth our investment, because it really is a huge investment on their part to add airplanes and staff and the time that it takes and all of that. So my job really is to connect with as many different businesses and organizations in our community, like Visit Quad Cities, mm-hmm. like the Chamber, mm-hmm. economic development groups, understand what they're seeing, what the outlook looks like for our community, what are maybe things I don't know about that I can't access through my data sources, and try and tell a cohesive story about our region that's compelling to airlines that helps bolster what they're looking at.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And also telling stories about our airport. And you're in the early stages of a very massive renovation. How's that going?
It's going great. We have 4 total phases. We completed phase 1 in 2025. So that was really an enabling project, what we called it, because that focused a lot on getting all of that giant TSA bag screening equipment out of the public view. So for almost 25 years, people were used to having to bring their bags to the airport, check in at the counter, and drag their own giant suitcases to the bag screening machine and leave it there, which then would be hauled away by the airlines. But, you know, of course, if you go to other airports, you leave it at the ticketing counter, as it should be. So we were really catching up because our airport terminal is 40 years old and predates mm-hmm. TSA. We were given a pass for a while, but it was time to meet their expectations in terms of security and get all that screening device equipment out of sight. So mm-hmm. this allowed us to do that. We built a giant bag makeup facility that allows people to leave their luggage at the ticketing counter. It goes back on a belt, goes through the screening device, and goes out into a giant carousel. Airlines can pull right up with their bag carts, heave it on there, and go out to the ramp. So it's more secure for TSA, but it's also more efficient for the airlines.
Well, first off, I just am having a hard time believing it's 40 years old, because I'm gonna bore you with some memories of the old joint. But friends, don't worry. Don't let that tune you out of this conversation with Ashley Johnston. We're going to be back in just a minute. Thank you for listening to The Conversation on WVIK.
VIK comes from Golder Care Solutions, offering advice about preserving assets, planning for the nursing home, and navigating Medicaid. Golder Care Solutions has been serving the Quad Cities since 2008. More information is at goldercare.com. And support for WVIK also comes from Source Bookstore, offering thousands of used and out-of-print books in all genres, music, and movies. Open 7 days a week at 232 West 3rd Street in Davenport, serving the Quad Cities for 86 years. That's Source Bookstore. And support for WVIK comes from family-owned Rafferty Funeral Home in Moline, dedicated to serving veterans with honor and working to ensure veteran families receive complete VA death benefits. More at RaffertyFunerals.com/veterans benefits.
I'm Meadow, and WVIK is my station.
Well, welcome back. And welcome back to the conversation. My guest is Ashley Johnston from the Quad Cities Airport. And before we get into all these cool new things that are coming up, you just keep stirring up memories. And so when I was a kid, I think my mom just, it was a cheap diversion because she had three boys to wrangle. And we would go out to the old terminal. And I remember it vividly. It was very sort of Jetsons. I mean,
it was very, very cool. Oh. 60s mod look. Looking. And the old pictures are like just cool era architecture.
And it was super cool. Like if our dad was coming back from a trip, which was much rarer, you know, then this is in the late 60s, early 70s. And it was just so, so very cool to go to the airport. Right. And of course, to think that this one is now 40, that's crazy. And it was a key that you mentioned that this was built before TSA, before our security concerns were enhanced after 9/11. And I do have many memories of even in that building, you would just go out to the gate and wait for your party to arrive and, you know, make a mess of things and then get back in. So we do have to be a lot more careful and concerned about that. But I do have to lift up your amazing unveil of, was that phase two that we were kicking off most recently?
That's right. So we did a brick smashing instead of the traditional dirt shoveling groundbreaking for phase two of Project Gateway.
Now, if you want to know, friends, why a brick smashing is so important in the life of this building. Anybody who's ever taken a roller bag to the Quad Cities Airport, all I need to say to you is clickety, 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 clickety. And what happened at the press conference?
I swear this was not a paid actor, but while Ben was unveiling the various
Ben Leichner,
our executive director, right, yeah. That's right. As he was going over some of the exciting changes that are coming through this phase, he specifically called out that we will be removing the brown brick floors and the clickety clack of the suitcases as a passenger entered the scene right behind the podium while all cameras were pointed on him. And the timing was uncanny, just perfect. And the passenger knew he'd kind of been, he didn't exactly know what was going on, but he knew he was in on the joke somehow.
And everyone's looking at
him. Yeah, as he's just trying to go to his gate. Yeah, yeah. So it was really perfect. But yeah, maybe one of the most fun groundbreakings I've been able to attend.
Brick breaking.
That's right.
So then what's on the horizon for the project?
So again, all of that brown brick floor will be replaced with a smooth terrazzo. If you go to the airport today, you'll see a preview of that behind the ticketing counter. So that was part of that enabling phase one, is updating the ticketing counters, but the new flooring was installed behind them. So that will be spread throughout, some new carpeting in different areas near baggage claim and some lounge areas. But they're also updating all of our restrooms to exceed ADA standards. They're adding companion care facilities like an adult-sized changing table, adding a nursing mother suite. Mm-hmm. And they're actually adding restrooms by bag claim as well, because if you notice today, there are no bathrooms in bag claim. You mm-hmm. go out of TSA and that's it. So they are making space for that and relocating our public meeting space over to where the old restaurant back room used to be. So to your point, people used to come to the airport and hang out. They would watch the airplanes. They would go to the observation deck. We had a giant restaurant that people would come to eat at. And that's just not how people travel anymore. So that restaurant will be resized on the pre-secure side and expanded on the air side where people spend the majority of their time. But, you know, one of the things that we've heard from people in the community over the years is just how much they enjoyed coming out and watching the airplanes on the observation deck. Yeah. So we are going to be adding a publicly accessible observation area as part of this project. So it will be approximately where the old bathrooms are right outside mm-hmm. of TSA before mm-hmm. you go through the checkpoint. completely outdoor space, lounge seating, glass walls, so you can see, especially American Airlines coming into their gates, but get a view of the airfield as well. And it'll be great for plane spotting.
Well, I don't really have memories of this. I was about two when my parents relocated here to the Quad Cities. But prior to that, we lived in Bensonville, Illinois, which is immediately south of O'Hare Field, right? And again, because, you know, my ma was cheap and needed some entertainment for three boys, she would take us out to O'Hare Field and just to watch the planes coming in and going out. And it is something that's kind of fun. So I'm anxious to see that observation deck. What's the timeline? When is everything going to get done?
So this phase will be done in about 15 more months. So we're 3 months into an 18-month project. So we're looking at wrapping that around November 2027, if all goes according to plan. We also have phases 3 and 4 coming up. Phase 3 will work on the front of the building, so completely redoing the frontage and adding a canopy to extend over the drop-off lanes. And then phase 4 will be bathroom updates on the secure side, some carpet, some seating, things like that, light touches on the post-secure side, because that was us updated in 2001, so a little bit newer. Not sure for phases 3 and 4 how long that will take, of course, but we're looking at starting phase 3 in the midst of phase 2 to try and get through this project within a reasonable amount of time, I think.
Well, so one thing that a lot of people I don't think understand is that the airport does a fantastic job of garnering grants, funds, things like that from the federal government and all sorts of sources. But also part of the funding mechanism is tied to property taxes. But here's the wild thing, not across Rock Island County, nobody in Scott County, no matter how often they use the airport, contributes. But for some reason in the shady, shady past, there were a collection of some townships, right, in the Rock Island County that it's on my bill, but it's not on other people's bills. I just wonder what the deal was behind that so many decades ago.
Yeah, it's interesting who gets taxed and who doesn't. And I think one thing that we hear a lot about is we charge for parking versus another airport, which may not charge for parking. And one of the reasons is because more than half of our passengers come from Iowa who don't contribute to the airport through taxes. So one way they've decided to right set that is rather than raising taxes on Illinois residents, they're going to charge people who actually are using the airport to help support it, to maintain that parking lot, to help pay the staff that's in charge of maintaining it and keeping it secure. So we try to keep those taxes really, really low, though, sure that using other sources to get what we need. All airports are supposed to be self-sustaining. I mean, the idea is that we're able to run ourselves and not rely on tax dollars to keep ourselves afloat.
Well, and nobody that I know of really complains about that we have that, because here's the deal. I mean, I talk to a lot of people in higher ed in communities about our size, give or take some. I don't know anybody's got an airport that is as connected as ours is. If you're going to live here, you don't want to live next to O'Hare or LaGuardia or LAX. You don't want that kind of a thing as part of the reason you come to a community like this. So to have an airport that gets that job done A+ all the time, I don't mind that it's on my property tax bill.
Thanks.
Yeah. Anyway, so when you do travel, though, it's been fun over the years to see how travel changes. It used to be traveling for the college. We almost invariably got on a TWA flight and went to St. Louis and then someplace else. But now, thanks to your work, we can go to Denver, Dallas, Chicago, of course, Atlanta. And who are the big hubs that I'm missing?
Charlotte,
of course.
Yes.
Yeah, and we did that. Jenny and I flew through Charlotte not all that long ago. And I know you guys are always working on something. Is there, you don't have to tell us any details, but any announcements you'd like to see in the next year or two?
There's always announcements. I mean, it's such a win for us when we get new routes, even new frequencies. I know that's not quite as flashy in the news to say we have an extra flight to a hub we already serve. But for us, what that really means is more options for our community and more connectivity. Activities. So you're not having to rely on one bank of flights in Atlanta to get wherever you're going in the world. Now you have some flexibility with that. So we did get a third frequency to Atlanta that was added on in May. Mm-hmm. Which has been great because, of course, Atlanta, you can truly go almost anywhere in the world. And now you have an early morning, a midday, and an evening. So that helps the business traveler, but it helps the leisure traveler as well.
Sure. Now, those of us who have a travel partner who doesn't think that any layover shorter than 90 minutes is, possible because it's too anxiety producing. I'm not naming any names here, but it does help one find where the good food is at these airports where we might choose a longer layover,
right?
And Charlotte, dang, they got some chicken down there that is But Atlanta, my secret is always go to the international terminal if you got time, because the food is just like a notch above. If those are my little tips.
Yeah.
I've spent enough time in O'Hare to know every inch of that joint. But that's a sort of a Kai problem. That's all that is. Hey, I'm having fun swapping stories with Ashley Johnston from the Quad Cities Airport. But this is that time every week on The Conversation on WVIK when we step aside for a true master storyteller. It's time once again for Rock Island Lines with Roald Tweet.
This is Roald Tweet on Rock Island. Rock Island Lines is permitted 2 commercials a year. This is one of them. I won't mince words. If you have any small sunny corner in your yard or garden, the drier and more neglected the better, you need to get your plant catalogs out and begin right now to track down one of our nearby prairie wildflowers, the poppy mallow, Calliroe involucrata. The poppy mallow was once common all along the Mississippi River Valley, but it has retreated to fewer and fewer waste spaces. I saw my first one 10 years ago at a city park in Oquaka, Illinois, just south of here. Small cherry red flowers blanketed the whole field as if children had carefully stuck American Legion poppies straight up every 1 or 2 feet right in the grass. A miniature Flanders field. Their satiny petals glistened in the sun. They stood up from creeping green leaves hidden deep in the grass. You know how some books so unexpectedly take your breath away that you are forever giving your own copy to other readers? These bright flowers did just that. I suddenly understood Emily Dickinson's reaction to a field of wildflowers when she wrote, "I taste a liquor never brewed." A biologist friend later identified the flowers I picked and brought back as an obscure relative of the hollyhock and hibiscus, once ranging from South Dakota to Illinois. Never popular enough to have a common name, they were sometimes called buffalo rose in the Dakotas and wine cups elsewhere. The poppy mallow sends down a single deep taproot, its prairie survival tool, which makes it impervious to drought and to anything your lawnmower can do. It blooms from June until frost at the end of growing shoots. Each flower lasts a single day, but they're so plentiful I once counted 200 open at a time on a single plant. You have to have one of your own. A word of warning, once you let one small Midwest prairie flower past your fence, bet you can't stop at just one.
Rock Island Lines with Roald Tweet is underwritten by Augustana College, Rock Island, Illinois.
And friends, we're so grateful for your support, which keeps Rock Island Lines on the air and the late, great Roald Tweet still entertaining us with yarns about our community's history. It's here because folks just like you have gone over to WVIK.org and they have clicked on that magical button that says donate and keeps this station alive and thriving. Speaking of websites, my guest is Ashley Johnston from the Quad Cities International Airport, and you have a pretty cool website yourself. How do I find out more about the airport?
QCAirport.com. Easy as that.
That's pretty doggone simple, as a matter of fact. All right, so we've been talking about the airport kind of behind the scenes, but what about you as a consumer? You do a lot of traveling, and I assume some for work, but
I get to do a little bit of both. It's
What is it like when you go to another airport though now? Because you kind of know. So how do you judge an airport when you're traveling someplace?
I'm looking at their wayfinding, for example. Are their signs clear? Can I read them easily? Is there branding involved, maybe? I look at how they do their terminal advertising. Who are the companies that they're working with? What does it look like? What even mechanisms are they using? Are they digital? Are they static? But even their announcements, you know, how frequent are their announcements? What does their PA system sound like? And I have kind of a funny story about that. I was traveling through Baton Rouge for work at a conference, and I was waiting at the gate, And I heard a voice come over the PA that just gives the standard announcements that we're required to give about security measures. And I recognized the voice, and it is the same person that does our terminal announcements. So I sent him an email and I said, "Michael, his name is Michael Ashcraft. He's in the Kansas City area." And I emailed him and I said, "Do you do the PA announcements for Baton Rouge?" And he said, "I do." And I said, "I'm here and I'm listening to you right now." So he does that, but he also does a ton of voiceover work and commercial work. Yeah, and so he's a big deal, and we're lucky to have him. But I was not expecting Baton Rouge Airport to be the place that I heard him.
Well, there were quite a few Ashcrafts from around here. Does he have any ties to the Quad Cities community that
he
you know
was
of?
Originally in this area? I believe he was in Davenport.
Okay.
And then relocated to Kansas City.
Okay, got it. Well, that's one thing I like to listen to as well. Just, I don't know, I think it's part of being in radio. And when you are in a different place and you hear that voice, sometimes it is a kind of authentic and sometimes it's very jarring. Yeah. I've been places where I'm sorry, that accent doesn't work here. And what I really love is if I'm in O'Hare, the guy sounds like he's kind of irritated with you. You know, welcome to Chicago.
I was going to say, do you have a good South Side accent? Do they make sure?
It's exactly. Yeah. It's more like if somebody asks you to take a bag, just, you know, what are you doing? You know, that's what you kind of expect to come out of his voice. But I do like those more authentic regional voices as well. So speaking of travel, one of the things that I've long been intrigued about with you, my friend, is you seem to have a very special relationship with a particular amusement facility in Orlando, Florida.
I'm a Disney adult. It is true.
How did this happen?
I don't know. Actually, so I had very lovely parents that would take me as a little kid. Aww. And so we enjoyed it as a family vacation. And then as I grew up, I kind of just had this feeling like I wanted to go back. I had a friend that did the Disney College program and she wanted to go back and visit. So did my first adult trip with her. And then just kind of felt like, I don't know if I got as much out of that as I want to. Like, I think I can see more. And went back, had another short trip, and then I met my now best friend in 2011. We were working together, and she had never been to Disney as a kid, and she'd always wanted to go. She was desperate to go, and I thought, well, I'll go with you. I enjoy going there, so I'll plan the whole trip. And so I really just dove into the process of making sure that she had this experience that lived up to these expectations she's had since she was a kid. And I made a PowerPoint presentation for her parents because they were going to fund it for her as like a college gift.
Aww.
So I'm like, well, if your parents need to know more about it, like, here's this deck of all the things we're gonna see. And they loved it. And aww. So she and I, that became like our connection point, you know, even after we had moved on from different jobs and working together anymore. And we were not always great about getting together, even though at the time we both lived in Naperville, which sounds ridiculous now. But you know how it gets sometimes with friends. You talk enough that you're like, it's like I see you, it's fine. So we would go to Disney every year, and that was like our bonding girls trip. And so it just became such like a special place for her and I to reaffirm our friendship over the years.
Yeah.
So it just kind of stuck with me.
I think I've seen somewhere people do this for like a living. They arrange trips for people and they help them with passes and things. Is that something that you've ever heard of that people do?
Travel agents?
Well, it's not so much that. Oh, they specialize in Disney.
Just in Disney?
And it's like, we're going to get you going to be in this line at this time, and then you jump this and all this kind of stuff.
I mean, they're definitely Disney specialists that it's like a travel agency, but because Disney is is complex nowadays, it does take a little bit of knowledge to know.
Sure.
If you want to take advantage of all the things that are available to help you avoid those lines or know how to strategize or whatever, you can make it as laid back or as scheduled as you want it.
Yeah.
But you know, even like taking my dad had open heart surgery in October 2020. And so we went, I took him in September 2021 is kind of just like a fun trip for getting through that. And he was such a champ and like has been doing fantastic. He goes to the gym for like an hour and a half every day now and just a complete lifestyle change. But we celebrated that. And then we went for his 75th birthday. My mom and I took him to Disney for his 75th birthday. So it's just been a special place with a lot of memories for people very, very close to me over the years. And in order to make sure everyone gets the trip they want, it has required me to stay up on my Disney research and knowledge. So,
obviously.
But even like the fascination for me too is not just going to the park and riding a ride. There's so many things that we take for granted every day that were born out of Disney innovation and Walt Disney as an inventor and as the people that he hired to be inventors. So the ride vehicles push a trash can. So swinging doors was a Disney invention to help make sure that trash wasn't open and out and to keep parks clean. Mm-hmm. But all the different patents and stuff, the city planning that goes into Disney and sure. the colors that they choose all have a meaning and a purpose. So when you start diving into it, you're like, man, this is... It's fun, but there's so much more behind this that's just really fascinating as how it's infiltrated different areas of our everyday lives, too.
Well, I'm sure you've heard of the town of Celebration, Florida.
I have.
Okay, so this is my one. I've never been to Disney World. I went to Disneyland when I was younger, sure. and the million years ago. But I was at a conference, and they put us up in one of the Disney properties, the speakers or something. So, and I really wanted to go to the Columbia restaurant, which is based in Tampa, but they have one in Celebration because I got to go. I mean, I march by my stomach wherever I go. So it was dark because, you know, it's like January, February at 7 p.m. And so I'm walking along the side of the road, not a very pedestrian-friendly state, Florida, and I'm convinced that an alligator is going to get me, right? I should have realized that it was kind of chilly and dark and they don't do anything right. So at that time of night, I get into Celebration. It's getting brighter and brighter and brighter, but I'm still convinced that there's a gator, you know, in the grass right over there. So I start crossing a street when I get the light, and one of the fabulous Disney buses almost ran me over. Doing a right on red without really kind of stopping, right? So I could have been a footnote in the Disney story. Oh,
man. Park passes plastic. For life.
Oh, well, yeah, if I survived. But yeah. The salad was worth it. The salad at the Columbia restaurant. If you ever go, Ashley, because they got it down there. It's called the 1905 salad. It is one of the best salads. Now I'm getting hungry. Uh-oh. Look at this. Look what's happening. Okay, you are an experienced traveler. You know how to get the most out of your fun. So this is a very important question for you. What are some of your favorite things to do for fun here in the Quad Cities?
Here in the Quad Cities, I think in enjoying the nature that we have and the access to the river and just the views that we have. Again, you know, growing up in Naperville, it is very, very suburban, and there are pockets of nature and things that you can enjoy. There's in Barton Arboretum next door in Lyle, but, you know, obviously Chicago is cityscape. So I think the connection to nature out here just gives you that right balance of being able to have access to the things that you need while also being able to turn off from all of that and unwind. And I've taken the most beautiful sunset and sunrise pictures, Iowa sunset and sunrise pictures from my apartment complex parking lot. And you're just like, man, like what a chance to pause and just enjoy your surroundings. So even just being out here is really, really nice. The food, I think one of the things that I always tout about the Quad Cities is that you have the chains that you expect and that are consistent, but you have so many unique food options that you can only find here. And that's really, really fun to discover and enjoy.
Now, I want people to know that these are not paid endorsements, but have you been to Desi Monk's?
No.
Oh, it's so good. It's an Indian restaurant that's right by the Bettendorf Public Library, Faye's Field, which is named for our late friend Faye Clow. It's in the strip mall that's across, and it's got a name that I can't think of, but Desi Monk's is like the most amazing Indian. Every time I've gone, I've gotten a different dish, and I've never been disappointed. It's been phenomenal. And of course, I talk about this with friends all the time. If you grow up around here, you grow up with authentic Mexican food. It's not somebody's idea of Mexican. This is like mole that abuelita made, right? So I generally, when I travel, I don't eat Mexican because I'm kind of a snob that way. But, you know, just going up to La Rancherita or anything like that. Do you have any, you want to drop any restaurant names of places you like to go to?
So I do. One of the things I do like about the Quad Cities, everyone seems to have their Mexican restaurant.
Yes, of course.
So I have my own. So I'm going to butcher this. I'm so sorry, my Chicago accent. But my choice is La Herradura.
La Herradura,
That's right. So they have one that's right by TBK, which is a convenient 30 seconds away from where I live and very, very dangerous. But I frequented the LeClaire location when that first opened. And so I'm very, very happy to have that nearby. So that is my QC Mexican restaurant plug.
If you ever see, now we're on the roll here, but Mi Oaxaca. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's a food truck. I don't think they have a brick and mortar, but I've seen them in a couple of places. The way that they do tamales is very different than the way you would get it from a place rooted in, say, Guanajuato. So if you ever see Mi Oaxaca for the Oaxaca State, you go and get some of that stuff.
And so. I'll plug one in the Naperville area as well. So we have friends that own a Mexican restaurant, Friaco's. So if you're ever at Naperville or Plainfield, it is owned by a very, very lovely family. They have restaurants in Indianapolis. They have Knoxville. They have one in Mexico that's really, really beautiful. But truly Mexican family owned mm-hmm. Friacos. Please mm-hmm. go support mm-hmm. them if you're ever in the suburbs.
All right. Shifting gears just a little bit. You reading anything interesting lately?
I am. So I started a book. One of my weird, if you've heard the term Roman Empire, my Roman Empire is NASA and really the 60s, 70s era of NASA. I did a huge case study of it as part of my major in college, where we did a book that studied the early days of NASA all the way through the Columbia disaster and really how they shifted as an organization. What were the internal mechanisms that maybe led to some of these disasters? But it just got me really interested in it because my grandma lives about an hour and a half away from Huntsville.
Oh, yeah.
And I spent my whole life going to her town and never understanding why there were rocket ships around. So when I got to college and I realized how big of a deal Huntsville was in that story, it really just fed into that need or that interest. So super into NASA history. So what I started over the summer is a book called Operation Paperclip, which is a deep dive into all of the scientists that were identified coming out of the end of World War II, all of the Nazi scientists mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. either chose Russia or chose the U.S. or the U.S. chose them to make sure that Russia didn't get them first.
Some of them didn't really have a choice.
That's right. Yes. Some turned in, some went other ways. Yeah. But it is a really deep dive into some of those key players coming out of that era and how that all, with the collapse of Germany and the end of the war, how all of those decisions were being made and what these people were actually doing throughout the war up until they came over to the States. So really interesting historical look into that era.
That sounds fascinating. I just picked up a book. I'm not even going to mention it yet because I haven't gotten into it yet. So I don't want to really give it a recommendation. But anyway, we have a book club at Augie, and I've been lazy in my summer reading, but we're doing Queen Esther by John Irving. And it's been really fascinating so far. It kind of takes you back for a moment or two to the setting of one of his beloved books, Cider House Rules. But it goes in a entirely different direction. So there's that. Any movies or streaming stuff or anything like that that you've been getting into lately?
Let's see. Not recently. I think one of the things that I started getting into was Welcome to Wrexham.
Girlfriend.
I was never a football or soccer fan.
Well,
and
they
that show
dramatize it so much.
But
right?
It was so good. And honestly, my favorite parts of that show too were the spotlights on the community and the people and the way that this club just was part of the whole town's fabric in such a deep, meaningful way. And what I've learned through that is just that's how European football clubs are. Like it's more than just a sport. Like it is just part of their identity as a community. But just the storytelling through that just really, really inspired. I've cried so many times watching that show. It's crazy. But yeah, I really, really enjoy that. And I'm looking forward to the next season already.
Yeah. And it was kind of funny because I don't really follow them in their sports, the sportsing, if you will. But so I was watching the last season of the show long after everybody knew what happened, but I didn't know what happened. So I was having fun right up to the very last minute. Anything else that you'd care to recommend? I put you on the spot a lot already, so it's okay if not. But
oh man, that's, you know, I will say if you're looking for, I tend to like a lot of nonfiction mm-hmm. books, but if you're looking for one that reads like an adventure book, one of my favorite books of all time is called The Lost City of Z. Ooh. And it is a book written by a journalist who goes with a group to try and retrace the steps of some of those early Amazon explorers mm-hmm. that claimed there was a lost city of gold. So it's told almost in two parts where you're following the historical retelling of what these explorers were doing and what they were finding and how dangerous these expeditions were, while these modern day explorers go and try and retrace all of their steps. So you get to learn both sides of it at the same time, but it's such a fun book to read.
Well, I could keep on chatting books and restaurants, especially for a long time, but unbelievably we've run out of time, and that's going to have to do it for this week. I want to thank my guest, Ashley Johnston from the Quad Cities Airport.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
And you do have some great websites and other things to keep abreast of what's going on there. You can find that at qcairport.com. I hope you'll check that out. And remember, friends, as ever and always, you can catch the conversation twice each week on WVIK. There's, of course, Saturday morning just right now. right before Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Then there's a rebroadcast Monday evenings at 8 right after Fresh Air. You can also find recent episodes at WVIK.org. Just look for us under the podcast tab. Big announcement, friends. Next week, our guest will be Don Wooten, the founder of this radio station. We actually went to his home and recorded an episode there, and I'll be very pleased to share it with you next Saturday. But for now, I will invite you to keep listening to your public radio station, WVIK, and thank you for being part of the conversation.
Listening to The Conversation on WVIK. If you missed part of it or just want to hear it again, tune in at 8 o'clock on Monday evening, right here on WVIK. WVIK operations are partially supported by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council. And support for WVIK also comes from J.P. Morgan Chase, serving the people, neighborhoods, and businesses of Iowa for over 35 years. More at jpmorganchase.com/Iowa. J.P. Morgan Chase Bank, N.A. Member FDIC. With national and international news at the top of every hour and local news throughout your day, we're WVIK, 90.3 FM and HD Rock Island, and at 95.9 FM, K240DZ Dubuque, WVIK, Quad Cities NPR.